Looking for a football show with a bit of a twist?
So I know the likes of Griezmann's big into his fashion.
He wanted a lot. One question he actually asked me was, could he make his studs light up when he runs?
Team 33, the football magazine show for the football purists.
Yeah, the Nike Mercurials from 1998, if you just show that boot to an entire generation of people, and they just get instantly nostalgic and remember everything from that era.
The very best interviews with the cult heroes of the past, and a look at the cultural side of football. Team 33, live at 9 p.m. every Friday on OTB Sports Radio.
The Off the Ball Podcast Network. The Paddy Power Half Hour on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.
You're very welcome into this Friday's edition of the Paddy Power Half Hour, where we've got a distinctly German feel about it because the Bundesliga is coming back in just a couple of weeks' time. Games are going to get back underway on May the 16th. It's all going to be very complex, particularly in terms of the fixtures. So as a result, myself, Will O'Callaghan, Endicall, and also Phil Egan have asked Ronan Murphy from Goal.com, who's one of their Bundesliga writers, to come on and join us this Friday to try and break down what's going to happen. Ronan, the Bundesliga this week officially getting that green light by Angela Merkel to come back, and teams back into training despite, you know, a handful of positive COVID tests last week.
Yeah, they've been back in kind of small group trainings for a few weeks now, so they've been kind of increasing it bit by bit, and they were in groups of five and seven, but they're back in full team training, and they are enforcing some sort of rules, but there has been a few positives, and they're testing every few days. But one of the things that came out of phase one, say, of the tests, there was three tests positive at Cologne, but in the second phase then they had no tests, so they've seen that as a good sign, and they gave the green light to go ahead then after that.
Given that we have had leagues across Europe, and particularly when we talk about France and the Netherlands, where they've made that decision because games won't take place till September, that their leagues are effectively quashed, is the reason that Germany has come back with the Bundesliga the way that Germany's been affected perhaps differently by COVID-19, far fewer cases, is that the reason we're getting the Bundesliga back here?
Yeah, I think it is. I think their testing is just so much better than everywhere else, and we've probably seen it in Ireland, the fact that we sent some of our tests even to Germany to get tested over there. So I think because of the strict measures they have in place, the fact that they're able to test so thoroughly, and they're able to test the players and managers, coaches, staff around the matches, they can test them a few times a week and make sure that nobody else has kind of passed on the coronavirus. I think because of that, they feel confident enough that it can be back Friday or Saturday week.
Ronan, we're going to have to pick our teams now for the rest of the season, myself, Phil and Enda. But in terms of what's actually still on the line in Germany at the moment, Bayern Munich are in pole position to win the league, but Leipzig and also Borussia Dortmund are still within touching distance with a bit of the season to play here.
Yeah, it's one of these seasons that's kind of a bit more open than previous seasons, because Bayern have won the league title 7 seasons in a row, so they're looking for an 8, and kind of people expect that. But because of kind of coaching problems and players kind of falling out with the previous coach, Niko Kovac didn't think he was maybe up to the job. Because of that, Bayern kind of slipped a bit before the winter break, and as a result, you see Borussia Dortmund and RB Leipzig, they're both kind of in contention, and they both have great squads and exciting attacking football, and it kind of has made for the most open and entertaining Bundesliga title in years, which is kind of perfect for us, seeing as how it's the only soccer we'll be able to watch for the next few weeks.
Yeah, we're going to be in front of the TVs. And Nicol, who are you going to be following for the rest of the season then?
Well, I started getting abuse from the two of you when I mentioned Bayern Munich. I'm not going to go for Bayern Munich because that's the easy choice. I would say if I had a soft spot for anybody over the last couple of years, it's obviously going to be Borussia Dortmund, because of just the model of the club. The fans are brilliant, and they're also a very good team. If you work down the table, you can't support RB Leipzig. They're the bad boys of the Bundesliga. Everyone hates them, but it's a very interesting story. And if anybody wants to do a bit of reading into just the structure of the Bundesliga before it comes back, RB Leipzig and the history of that club is one to very, very much dive into, because they have a really interesting history. If you want to go away from glory and go for a club that, you know, the fans are brilliant and you're happy enough with the mid-table side, Union Berlin are the side for you, because again, if you want to do a deep dive on that club, they've had an unbelievable history from being the only Eastern German team in during the Cold War. They were the side on the east side of the Berlin Wall, so that for me, first of all, is really interesting several financial difficulties throughout the 60s, 70s, 80s, even right up into the 2000s. And basically the fans took over the club and saved it from becoming just null and void and going away. And now they're in the Bundesliga. So it's really been a dream for them over the last couple of years. So they're the side that I would probably go for.
Yeah, Ronan, are Union Berlin the kind of hipster's choice at the moment? It was St. Pauli for a while. I've noticed a lot of people supporting Union Berlin online over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I think it is. And I think Ende, because of the story, like he said, the fact that they're the East German club, they're kind of the anti-football club on and off the pitch. So you don't expect attacking or attractive football from them, but they'll definitely be entertaining. And they have one of these kind of old-fashioned stadiums that we don't really see in the Premier League in England. The stadium of the Old Foresters House is the name in English, and it kind of has a charm maybe that we kind of don't see anymore with the kind of commercialization of football with billionaires taking over. So it's very much a fan club. So I can see why Ende has been drawn to them.
Phil Egan, are you going to embrace the evil here and go for FC Hollywood and pick Bayern Munich?
No, definitely not. Now, obviously, you want to see the favourites beaten. I just think in terms of how the season was panning out before the football was shut down, was Dortmund had kind of recovered. They'd had some crazy games where they just couldn't hold on to leads. You think of that Leverkusen game where they were 3-2 up with 10 minutes to go. That was the same weekend that Bayern and Leipzig played out a nil-all draw. But Dortmund seemed to steady the ship. They haven't been conceding goals. Obviously, they were unlucky not to progress in the Champions League, but they gave PSG a really good game and obviously only went out on away goals. You'd imagine, Ronan, with the 4-point advantage, Bayern are probably going to be able to see it through, because obviously Dortmund still have to play Bayern at home. They still have to play Leipzig. That Dortmund-Leipzig game actually might work out in Bayern's favour. We don't really know what behind closed doors, what the effect is going to be on teams like Dortmund or Bayern, who obviously have huge crowds going to their games, especially you think of the advantage Dortmund have. Then, you know, what kind of fitness are players going to have? What kind of form are they going to have? It's a hard one to call, but you'd imagine Bayern are going to be able to get over the line given, obviously, the quality of their squad.
Yeah, I would think so. There's kind of, it's three things that are true. In Germany, it's debt taxes and Bayern Munich winning the Bundesliga. So I think the same is going to happen again. They have that 4-point advantage at the moment. They have the best 11. And because maybe of the fact that coronavirus did happen and there was no football for the last couple of months, Robert Lewandowski was able to get fit again. And because they have him back, he was just so good before football stopped and before he got injured. It's kind of hard for any team to really defend against a striker who nearly guarantees a goal a game. And because they have these sort of players, and as long as they can stay fit, I can't see anyone else coming close.
Okay, interesting to see how that pans out. I'd imagine, Ronan, as well, a lot of Liverpool fans are probably going to be watching Timo Werner over the next few weeks. He's continually linked with a move to Anfield this summer. His release clause is still there for the first couple of months of the summer as well. He's repeatedly said that he's not interested in joining Bayern Munich at the end of the current campaign. Is Timo Werner the right player to go to Liverpool? It seems Leipzig players ending up at Anfield has become a fairly regular trait now, between Mane and also Keita in recent seasons as well.
Yeah, there seems to be a kind of a good connection there, and it would seem a good fit for him. I know people are probably saying, well, he's going to be on the bench behind Roberto Firmino, but I'm not sure that's exactly going to be the case, because Timo Werner, he's not really a central striker. I suppose Roberto Firmino isn't either, but Werner has the ability to play on the wing, and he likes to drift wide and then come in, and you see that a lot of times for Germany, where he doesn't really work too well as maybe a sole striker. So what I think is, if they did sign him, he'd be a great acquisition, because he could perhaps replace Mane or even Salah. So he offers that kind of versatility that Klopp would be able to rotate kind of between Werner and his three attacking options at the moment. And it would give more depth to the Liverpool squad, and it would probably make them much stronger to compete and win the Premier League again next season.
Yeah,
I know Didi Hamann was talking about Werner, and he said he wouldn't improve Liverpool's team. Obviously, it's hard to get into that front three, but he's still quite young. And what we've seen in the past with Jurgen Klopp is when players come into Liverpool, he improves them. So how much room is there for improvement with Timo Werner?
Well, if you look at that at the moment, I suppose he's second in the top scorer race for in the Bundesliga. So only Lewandowski is doing better than him. So when you consider it that way, if he, Klopp was to improve an already 20 goal a season striker to an even better striker, to kind of the sky's the limit for this guy. I think he just maybe he needs the right manager around him, and that's what he has in Nagelsmann at Leipzig at the moment. And I think Klopp could definitely make him a better player. And like you said, he probably wouldn't immediately challenge it. Like Didi Haman said, he probably wouldn't immediately be a better player than any of the front three in the attack. And in the attack, but what I think is that he could eventually be better than him, and he is a lot younger than him.
Did Bayern Munich miss a trick a couple of years ago? Werner was saying it seemed there was a deal set up and he felt he was probably on his way there. It didn't happen. Things worked out then with Leipzig after that. Did Munich miss out? Because it gets to a point where Lewandowski is going to have to be replaced there.
Yeah, I think they did. I think they're kind of kicking themselves about it. And they've kind of come out and said, well, we're not interested in Timo Werner anymore. He's not really a fit for a club. But I think they're kind of more saying that because he has rejected them as much as they kind of just dilly-dallied about it and wanted to kind of play it deep the same way as they're looking to do Leroy Sané at the moment. Bayern just don't like spending money on these sort of players. And what we've seen recently in the Bundesliga in recent years is they look to try and get players on a free transfer, and they were hoping that they could do that with Timo Werner as well, but it just didn't happen for them. And it's probably better for maybe him and better for Leipzig that he has hung around, and perhaps he'll move to Liverpool in the summer after all.
Leroy Sané is an interesting one because he's consistently linked with going to Munich. It seemed last summer that both sides were, in terms of both Sané and Munich, were interested in the move, but Man City were determined if he was going to leave, he was going to leave for top dollar. Given that, I'd imagine Bayern Munich aren't going to buy Philippe Coutinho this summer. Do they divert pretty much all their transfer funds into trying to sign Sané now?
Yeah, that is their big kind of aim for this summer. They're looking at maybe a right back as well, because Pavard is filling in there at the moment, but he's more of a centre back. He plays out with France as well, but he's only filling in for Bayern Munich at right back, and while Kimmich is in midfield, so they're looking to strengthen there. But their main hope is to get Sané, and then they'll have kind of Sané and Gnabry and Coman. They'll have three of the most exciting, quick attacking wingers in Europe, and they are trying to put the pressure on Bayern Munich. The reports in Germany this week have come out that Hansi Flick has talked to Sané on the phone to kind of convince him that this is our plan for you and we really want you. And there's also been talk that he's agreed a 5-year deal if he does move to Bayern Munich. And as well as that, then the Bayern Munich are trying to just buy him for cheap and maybe put the pressure on. And there's talk that they've offered 40 million for him, and that's just ridiculous kind of for a player of his calibre. So there is a big doubt on the Man City side whether they'll keep him and allow him for his contract to run down this season and maybe get more money elsewhere.
And Nicole, if you're Man City, are you fighting to try and keep Sané again this summer?
I don't think so, really. I mean, he was out pretty much all this season with injury. You have two wingers in Sterling. You have Bernardo Silva. You have Mahrez. Gabriel Jesus, we're probably going to see coming into the team a bit more again next season. So, I mean, there's better players out there than Leroy Sané, especially if, I mean, it's not so easy to come back from that sort of long-term injury, and it's not a guarantee that he will stay injury-free. So if Man City could cash in on him now, he's not going to be happy at Man City. He's probably not going to be starting at Man City. So they should really be getting a bit of money into their books so that they can balance it out on financial fair play once and go and get themselves a younger version of Leroy Sané, essentially.
What do you think, Phil?
I think Sané is a quality player. And when Enda said, you know, they didn't have him this season, how did Man City do without him? I mean, you think back to the big game.
It wasn't a left-winger issue, Phil, though. It was a defensive issue.
It was one of a few issues that they've had. But Sané, when he's played for Manchester City, has been excellent. You think of the game at the Etihad when they beat Liverpool. Who scored the winner? It was Leroy Sané. I think even the game at Old Trafford last season when he came on for City, a game that they hadn't quite put to bed yet, as soon as he came on, he just made an instant impact. I know there has been, like, there was a major surprise, obviously, when he was left out of Germany's World Cup squad, and people have questioned his attitude. It's an easy one to throw at a player if he gets left out of teams or he's not included in squads where you think, oh, he must have an issue with his attitude. He's still very young, and I think at times he's a little bit raw, but a serious talent. I can understand the talk coming out of Munich this week to say that, you know, he isn't the finished article, and you wouldn't be paying the sum of money that Bayern were talking about last summer, where they were are going to have to spend in excess of 100 million. Obviously, they're starting low at 40. We know the transfer market's going to be skewed now because of the COVID-19 pandemic, but they're probably just testing Man City. If City want to let him stay for a season, I'm sure he probably wouldn't be happy about it, but eventually he'd have to get on with it because he'd probably have ambitions internationally to play at the Euros and obviously looking ahead to future World Cups as well.
I would say one way to put it, Phil and Will, is that it's not going to be a Serge Gnabry issue with if he goes to Bayern Munich. Man City know how good Leroy Sané is and can be, but they're not going to be cut short if Leroy Sané goes on to be a world superstar because he already had the potential to do that. So I don't think they're going to be shocked if he does go on to better things at Bayern Munich. But I do think there are better players out there than Leroy Sané, and if you can guarantee that they're going to stay fit, and Leroy Sané, you can't guarantee that, then they wouldn't be crazy to sell.
I was just thinking as well, Ronan, when it comes to Leroy Sané and this potential move to Bayern Munich as well, I mean, Serge Gnabry, I know you have to rotate, but his development, in particular the way he's kicked on the last 18 months or so, to me seems like a lock to play off that left-hand side. Would it have to be a case of Sané and Gnabry having to be happy enough to change around, or is there a case that maybe Gnabry could go over the other side? Would it affect his effectiveness if Leroy Sané was to come into this squad?
I wouldn't say it would affect Gnabry. I think Kingsley Coman is probably the one that's most at risk because of Sané coming in. I could see Sané even push to the right for Bayern Munich and be made to come inside, but I think the big reason that Bayern are pushing for Sané is not only that he's German, but the fact that the two wingers they have at the moment are injury prone, and Coman seems to get a kind of an injury after injury. He's like someone that's made of biscuits. He just seems to pick up injuries as when the wind blows. So I think what might happen is that they will rotate on one side and keep Gnabry in supplying Lewandowski on the other side. And because Bayern Munich winning the Bundesliga is kind of easy for them, the Champions League is their dream every season, and they need to be competing for the Champions League, and they need players like this. So they probably need to have too much talent, more talent than they actually need, and that's probably what's been letting them down in past seasons, because injuries have hit at a wrong time and then they've been knocked out of the Champions League because they've missed key players. But if they have players like Sané on the bench or Coman on the bench to come on, then they shouldn't have these same problems anymore.
Ronan, I'd imagine from a potential ex-Man City player to an ex-Man City player who I'm sure a lot of fans of the Premier League are probably going to be looking to scout over the next while when the Bundesliga is on TV as well, is Jadon Sancho, you know, one of the hottest talents in Europe. There seems to be that kind of growing acceptance in Borussia Dortmund that big bids are going to come in this summer, notwithstanding the financial situation around COVID-19. How impressive has Jadon Sancho been this season? Because some people have said maybe his level has dropped a bit since Christmas.
Yeah, I think what kind of happened with Sancho is he had a few disciplinary issues. He kind of got in trouble with Dortmund for returning from England international duty late. But since then, he's put his head down and he's worked hard, and he seems to contribute either a goal or an assist every game. And I think Borussia Dortmund's players themselves even kind of look to him to create something magic or to change a match and turn it on his head. And he's like Phil was saying with Leroy Sané for Man City last season, he's kind of a real difference maker, and you can rely on him. And I think that's why English teams, Premier League teams, are looking at bringing him back to England. And whoever signs him, they'll be getting a huge star, because we've seen Pulisic come over from Dortmund to Chelsea, and he wasn't even the talent that Sancho is, but he's played very well in the Premier League since he kind of was able to settle in. And Sancho shouldn't have the same problems adapting, because he's an English player and he's played with Man City before. So I think the big problem is the price tag, and Borussia Dortmund will definitely be looking for more than 100 million, even with the situation at the moment. They just won't give it up too easy, because they know they can wait out for these big money fees like they did with Dembele moving to Barcelona a few seasons ago.
Phil, I get the impression if Sancho goes on the move, you're probably talking Dembele-style money north of 100 million euro if he's going to move.
Yeah, I mean, it's even one thing to think about, whatever about the transfer fees, but just what kind of window we're going to have between the end of this season and the start of next season, and also how players will feel about their futures. You know, they've obviously had a lot of time in isolation, they've had a lot of time to think, but will players feel maybe that they have to kind of stick with the clubs they're at, because this is just unforeseen circumstances, and maybe now is not the time to move. But then on the other side of the coin, you could have clubs thinking, we need to get money, as much money as we can, because of the impact of this pandemic. But they don't want to be obviously selling players on the cheap, especially someone like Sancho, because he is a player that is high in demand, and he seems to be linked with Manchester United, with Chelsea, with Liverpool. They seem to be the three. Obviously, the obvious link with Liverpool is because Klopp and Dortmund, but obviously his age as well, and Liverpool are the best team in England at the moment, so why wouldn't they want somebody like Sancho?
Andy, your take on Sancho so far?
From what I've seen of him, he's a real talent. Serious pace, really good on the ball, really good vision as well. And for a player of his size and stature, he's no pushover as well. So I would agree with what Ronan was saying there about basically just being able to ready to adapt to the Premier League straight away, which is something that really does need to be considered. I mean, if you even have to just look at Naby Keita, who really struggled to get up to the physicality and pace of the English game. And you look at players of the past that come from Europe and struggle for the first 5, 6, 7 months to get up to the standard of the Premier League. So it'll be good for whoever buys him if he's able to just get in and get off from the get-go. So he's definitely an exceptional talent, but whether clubs are going to pay the price tag for him or not is going to be very, very interesting to see. It's all well and good being able to pay 120 million, 150 million before all of this, but I can see clubs being a lot more conservative come in the next few years. So you're looking at, if it's an English club, Manchester United have the money. Man City don't, because they obviously want to keep UEFA on their side when it comes to financial fair play. Newcastle are a club that could potentially have a ton of money in the next couple of years. So who knows, he could be heading up and becoming a Geordie.
Yeah, Ronan, interesting when it comes to Newcastle as well. You know, Nagelsmann has been spoken about as a potential coach there. We were talking on the show last week about the potential for choosing between Pochettino and Benitez. But is there a chance that Newcastle might shop for their next coach in Germany?
I think they'd be crazy not to look at him. But I think what also might happen is if they did come looking, he probably would turn them down, because he has essentially a similar situation already in his home country in Germany with Leipzig. They're a team with plenty of money. They kind of have all that Red Bull cash, so they don't really need to worry too much about financial fair play problems like Man City do, for example. I know they don't have the billions that these Newcastle owners will have, but they're still able to get all the best young talent. And I think Nagelsmann, he's the kind of manager who likes developing players, and that's just Red Bull's strategy in Salzburg and Leipzig. They kind of buy these players, maybe looking at Ligue 1 and get these French guys that haven't played too many games for top teams. They look to players in Africa, try and develop these players and sell them on for a big profit. But by bringing in Nagelsmann, they've moved on to the next step, and they want to compete in the Champions League. They want to compete for the Bundesliga. And Nagelsmann has gotten them into the last eight of the Champions League this season for the first time in their history. You know, it's a short history, but for the first time ever. So I think Nagelsmann, at the moment, he's in the right place for him. It was the right step to move from Hoffenheim to Leipzig. So it probably would be too early for him to decide to leave and go to the Premier League. I'd say we could see it in the future, but probably not as soon as this year.
In terms of Leipzig's... Sorry, Phil, go on.
No, I was just going to ask Ronan, like, for people that don't watch the Bundesliga regularly, and obviously it's going to be the first major league back, and it's going to be, you can watch it on TV over here. So what can fans expect? What kind of style of play? Obviously, some of the games that we've seen, I think back to even the Dortmund-Bayern Munich game last season was one of the best games I'd seen in a long time. So the quality, is there. What kind of games can fans expect in terms of tactically even?
Yeah, I think maybe what differs from the Bundesliga to maybe the Premier League is the defending probably isn't to the same level. So you tend to see a lot more goals, and as a result, the games are kind of more attacking and more exciting. And I'm not sure how that'll kind of translate with no fans, but I'd say we'll still get the same sort of attacking football. And there's a lot of technical players, good dribblers, fast wingers, those sort of players that maybe mightn't get a chance in England. And that's why players like Jadon Sancho or even the likes of John Joe Kenny or Ethan Ampadu or players like this, young guys have moved over to the Bundesliga because they'll get a chance there that they mightn't have gotten in the Premier League because it's the same cash isn't there. So there's a lot of young talent, and it mightn't be the most glamorous league for Premier League fans, but when you look around the games and from watching it in the next few weeks when there's no other football on, what you'll probably see is a lot of future Premier League stars kind of in their early 20s kind of cutting their teeth there, and then you'll see them maybe move to bigger clubs in a few years because it is one of the top five leagues in Europe, but it just doesn't have the cash to compete with the Premier League. So you tend to see the players, the future of the Premier League kind of a couple of years early.
It would seem as well, Ronan, that this kind of strategy that some of the Bundesliga teams have taken in terms of looking at Premier League youngsters who maybe aren't getting first team football, offer them a chance to come across and develop them as players, this could be potentially very profitable for the German clubs as well, because in all likelihood, you're probably going to end up selling these players back to England at some point.
Yeah, I think Sancho is probably the prime example of that. He cost next to nothing, and they're making a fortune on him now. He cost something like 7.5 million, and they're going to be making at least 10 times that now. So I think it is a good way of a good model of business for the German clubs, and a lot of them maybe further down the table are seen as selling clubs. They don't have the financial might of Bayern Munich or Borussia Dortmund, and they do look to kind of find this cheaper talent and this talent that maybe doesn't get a chance to shine in their home countries or in England. And perhaps we could see more Irish players maybe giving it a chance and seeing would it work out for them in the future, especially as chances it with English clubs are more and more difficult to get these days.
Yeah, probably best not to talk about Johansson at this stage when it comes to his international eligibility. Before we let you go, Ronan, give us some predictions then, because title race, we're probably saying Bayern Munich are in pole position to go 8 in a row here.
Yeah, I would think so. It's hard to look past them, and especially the fact that they have a gap already. And this weekend kind of opens up with the Riviera Derby, Borussia Dortmund against Schalke, and that could be anybody's. There was a 4-4 a few years ago, so it's kind of hard to predict that one. And it could see Borussia Dortmund slip a bit further behind Bayern because Bayern have a much easier fixture with a trip to Union Berlin.
If we're to assume that probably Leipzig and Borussia Dortmund take second and third, that fourth place, do we look at Bayer Leverkusen here, or who do you think is finishing in fourth?
That's a bit harder because the kind of head coaches at the clubs will maybe be what separates them at the end. And I think Gladbach maybe have the best head coach of the three in Marco Rose, because Peter Bosch, former Borussia Dortmund manager, he's the guy in charge of Leverkusen at the moment, but he has this kind of relentless attacking football, and it leads to very, very many mistakes at the back. And if you want to watch him, if you're not only going to watch one Bundesliga match of a weekend, it should be Bayer Leverkusen, because any score could happen. They could win 4-0 or they could lose 3-0 despite having 70% of possession. So, and then Schalke, they'd be in the running as well with Dave Wagner. Huddersfield fans that obviously know him well, he did such a good job there, and he kind of has been given a bigger team to manage in Germany, and he's doing it very well. He's steadied the ship greatly there. So it is a three-horse race, but I kind of look to Gladbach because of the manager they have and maybe the attacking talent they have up front in the French duo of Alassane Plea and Marcus Thuram, Lilian Thuram's son, of course.
Mm. And in terms of relegation, who are you tipping to be the three to go down to the second division for next year?
Yeah, so Paderborn, they're another team who love attacking, and despite the fact that they're mainly rubbish, the players aren't good enough really for the Bundesliga, they still give their all against every team. They won't set up defensively, even if they're playing Bayern Munich. But so they're also entertaining to watch, but there's no chance they're staying up. The players just aren't good enough. Yeah, I probably would look at Fortuna Dusseldorf coming second bottom, and then Werder should be good enough to maybe move out of the relegation. They're second bottom at the moment, and it could be Mainz going into that third relegation spot and then playing in the playoff against the second Bundesliga team.
Great stuff. Ronan, thanks a million for joining us. You can read all your articles, of course, on goal.com. And we're looking forward to the Bundesliga getting back underway over the next couple of weeks.
Thanks very much. Me too.
Right, well, time for us now to have a look at things a little bit closer to home. And Phil Egan, we're talking about the League of Ireland again this week because, again, I guess kind of kites are being flown of what potentially could happen here. And I was looking at some programmes yesterday during the foot and mouth, and there were games played behind closed doors at that time. It seems behind closed doors is the only way that the League of Ireland can get back underway at the very earliest in late July. By the 20th of July is when sporting leagues would be allowed behind closed doors. And certainly being suggested at the moment moment, the potential for maybe these games being played in neutral grounds?
Yeah, obviously the story going around this week, Niall Quinn suggested that maybe neutral venues, but there was talk of the Aviva as just the one venue, but I don't really see how that's viable in terms of the pitch. I mean, you can't keep playing on that pitch, but also it's a hell of an ask to be asking clubs from all around Ireland to have to travel to the Aviva to play any game. So I think the idea of the regional hubs is far more sensible, where, you know, you've got, say, the likes of Sligo Rovers, Derry City, Finn Harps playing in a ground there. Obviously, the Dublin clubs playing in a Dublin ground as well. And then there was talk of the RSC maybe, or whether you want to have Turner's Cross stage in Cork City and Waterford and Wexford. And then obviously, if you want to go west to Midlands, you've got the option of Longford or Galway Athlone. That seems a bit fairer as well, because I said, if you're Finn Harps or Cork, and you're being asked to travel to the Aviva for a game all the time, financially, I don't know how doable it is. Obviously, the FAI are hoping for a bit of a helping hand from FIFA. We know the UEFA money they can't get because that was already spent a couple of years ago.
Mm. And you're from the Northwest. How would you feel about the prospect of Finn Harps or Derry having to travel down to the Aviva to play games? I'm assuming this is a non-runner.
Well, it's not a chance, not a hope. I mean, it's one thing for the Premier League to decide on hubs around the country, but it's another thing for a league that is made up of semi-professional and professional clubs to do this. So the likes of Finn Harps, they're not a full-time club. I think they might have 3 full-time players on their books. The rest work part-time. So you have to, a lot of them people have to take their Fridays off to play games as it stands, never mind going down to Dublin for a weekend to play a game every single weekend. So that's an unrunner for me, especially when you look at the regional clubs like Finn Harps, like Sligo Rovers, and ones who don't have full-time players, who aren't full-time clubs, and there aren't too many of them in Ireland. So that's it's a nonsense idea, in my opinion. They're going to have to come up with something different than that. Even the fact that even if the regional hubs do go ahead and you have the likes of Derry City, Finn Harps, Sligo Rovers, all the Northwest clubs playing the same venue, which venue is that? Because Derry City is obviously in Northern Ireland, who have had different protocols to Ireland throughout this entire thing. So, and they're going to have a different plan when it comes to opening up the country again than Ireland will. So that complicates things further. And if you listen to some of the players that are involved in the clubs, the likes of Graham Cummins, who spoke out during the week, he just can't see it happening. So it's the FAI have a very difficult decision on their hands, because the Premier League, it's one thing them making a decision, they've got billions behind it, the FAI don't, and that's going to be the real difficulty. It's going to come down to financial issues and it's whether these players can actually afford to play or not.
And Phil Egan, when it comes to the Premier League, we know at this stage, we've been talking about the Bundesliga for the last 20 minutes or so. We know they're back in the next couple of weeks. La Liga are hoping to resume in early June. Their players return to training as of Monday. Things seem to be really moving in that regard. The Premier League, though, as of last Friday, where we had that meeting and the teleconference between all the chairpersons of the different clubs, get the feeling the Premier League is still a little bit away from coming up with an idea of how they come back. And the looming day for them, Phil, is the 25th of May. They have to submit their plans to UEFA at that point.
Yeah, they're due to meet again on Monday. And obviously, there has been a few concerns raised about how safe it is, a few of the club's doctors. And you obviously had Richard Bevan, the LMA chief, coming out during the week saying that if they wanted to play, if they wanted to make sure the season does actually finish, they're going to have to play in neutral venues. Obviously, Brighton have come out and said they don't want to play at a neutral venue, but it's just something that is going to have to happen if they want to finish the season. And Steve Parrish, the Crystal Palace chairman, said that, you know, if clubs think that neutral venues isn't fair, maybe they should look a couple of months down the line and think about what the impact will be if they don't actually finish the season and they don't get that money that is due to come to them from the sponsorship and TV money. So a lot, but I think everyone's going to be looking at Germany. And even, we obviously know the biggest league to cancel their season was France last week. But even the Lyon president has come out this week and said that maybe they were too hasty in that decision, that if German league is coming back, and the Premier League and Spain and Italy are looking at ways to do it. Maybe France went a bit early with that, but it'd be interesting to see how that pans out.
Mm. And can you understand, say, the position of some clubs like Aston Villa at the moment, where they're arguing 6 of our last 10 games that we have left are at home? We're at a severe disadvantage if these go to neutral venues, particularly when the race to survive is as tight as it is.
Yeah, well, like it is understandable. They're in a relegation battle, but at the end of the day, I'm not sure what benefit you get from playing at home. You're playing behind closed doors, so it's just familiarity of the ground essentially that you're getting. So I wouldn't have too much sympathy in that side of things if you really want to get this season finished. And really and truly, Steve Parish is spot on with what his estimation. The only reason the Premier League are pushing so hard to get this Premier League finished, this season finished, is because they need that TV deal money to be fulfilled. They need that contract to be fulfilled. And clubs need to look at that as the situation. It could be a harsher financial situation for them down the line if they don't get the money from this year's Premier League, because obviously a lot of clubs, they bet against the TV money that they're going to get. Most of their transfers, they're getting loans based on the fact that they're going to have money coming in later on in the season due to this money. So they have to weigh up whether getting relegated or potentially getting relegated. They might not even get relegated, is more damaging financially than not finishing the season.
Phil, on a very final note then, do you expect the Premier League season will get back underway? I mean, we've spoken about the $762 million in terms of the TV deal. We've spoken previously about the fact that they say they're willing to do lots of testing and they're willing to be innovative in terms of potentially where these games are played. And we've heard the talk of 10 neutral stadiums. Are we still expecting the Premier League season will get back underway?
Yeah, I'd be a lot more confident about it now, say, than I was a couple of weeks ago. I think the fact that Germany are going to get back up and running, obviously we don't know how that's going to go, but if Germany can do it, the Premier League will be thinking, if they can do it, why can't we? The Premier League prides itself on being the so-called best league in the world, as they often refer to themselves. So the thoughts of other leagues getting back up and running and then not being able to fulfill their season wouldn't make a laughing stock of them, because there's nothing funny about what's going on at the moment. But certainly I think they'll be keen to make sure that the 92 games are played and they'll all be televised. There's talk that some of the games will be on YouTube as well, and people will say they might have an appetite for games behind closed doors. And I know it's obviously not the same, but at the moment it's the best we can get and hope for.
Yeah, well, we're very keen for games to come back. We're already looking forward to watching the Bundesliga over the next few weeks when that returns. My thanks to Endicall and to Phil Egan for joining me on this afternoon's edition of the Paddy Power Half Hour. If you're just joining us now and you want to catch us back, you can do so on our social channels, on Off the Ball, on YouTube, on Twitter and on Facebook. And you can also check us out in audio form as well on the podcast section of offtheball.com or wherever you get your podcast. Thanks for listening, and we'll speak to you again soon.
The Paddy Power Half Hour on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.
That was an Off the Ball Podcast Network presentation.